from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
People use Travis Kelce. That's not fair to anyone. Travis Kelce is the greatest receiving tight end in NFL history. That's not fair. But if you look at some other very good offenses, like the year Lamar Jackson won the MVP with Mark Andrews as his number one target, all those years with Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates, there can be elite play from an offense with a tight end as your number one target, and then a cadre, a mix of receivers after the fact. That's very much what we're building here.
Greg Thompson, Cover One. I'm with Zach and Josh on what a Bills offense could look like with a tight end at the helm, which here has never happened. I mean, the Bills' history
literally
of tight
never.
End yeah. is... Like, Kincaid is going to smash every record that a Bills tight end's ever had. Again, bar's not very high. Pete Metzlars is going to have all of those records, I believe, from the early 90s. I don't think Dawson Knox got there on touchdowns, at least not yet. He's still on the team. 803-0550 is the phone number if you've got a question or comment on the Bills. We'll talk some fantasy a little bit later in the hour as well here on a Fantasy Friday. First, though, let's go to the Wester Hotline and bring in Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, one of our favorite visits here on the station. Morning, Sam. Thanks for getting up with us on this Friday.
Yeah, any problem. How's it going, guys?
It's going pretty well. We're less than 2 weeks away from training camp. And is there, kind of open-ended, like, is there a storyline or team you are most interested in once camp begins? Like, what's the thing your eyes are going to go to first when training camp's open?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them. Obviously, this dynamic with the Buffalo offense, I think, is one of the most fascinating stories. What they're going to do. Are they going to feed the entire offense through those tight end positions? Are they going to just work the middle of the field in the slot a ton? Or are they going to try and get, you know, legitimate outside number one X receiver production out of somebody like Keon Coleman? I do think that's a really interesting storyline. Another one I think that jumps to the top of mind is that situation in Pittsburgh with the two quarterbacks, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. First of all, how Russell Wilson is going to fit in this Arthur Smith offense, I think that has an incredibly broad range of outcomes. It could be the perfect system for him to bounce back and get somewhere near his best play again, or it could be a total disaster because it likes working in the middle of the field, and Wilson has never done that to a particularly high level, even when he was playing, you know, incredibly good football. And then obviously you have Justin Fields sort of sitting there waiting in the wings to come in if you need to.
You still got you, Sam?
Yep, still there.
Okay. One team, actually, that I was interested in asking you about. We'll get to the Bills, of course, here. Sam, you can follow him on Twitter, by the way. Check out his content, at @PFF_Sam. We had a Colts guest on yesterday, and we're talking about Richardson and how that the season ended there, and I'd forgotten that came right down to the wire, right? Like, there was a 4th-and-1 play to a backup running back that the Colts season basically ends on, where Houston maybe doesn't make the playoffs, and I wonder where we're at, even if that changes course. And Indy did that without Anthony Richardson the whole season at quarterback. But, like, for you, part of this will be what you thought of him coming into the draft. Did we see nearly enough of Richardson last year to even have a guess at what he might look like this year for the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw a lot from him last year in just a few games. The problem with him is, overall, we're just dealing with this incredibly small sample size of him as a quarterback. Like, even coming into the draft, his experience was extremely limited as a quarterback in college, and it was all projection to what he can be at the next level based off this incredible athleticism, size, strength, speed, all these things. And then we saw a few games, flashes of that as a rookie. The biggest sort of concern or the biggest thing hanging over all this is in 4 games, he was injured multiple times and ended up getting shut down for the season. So you have this guy who's literally the most athletic quarterback to ever enter the NFL if you start factoring in size and all that kind of thing. Like, he's more athletic than Cam Newton based off those kinds of measures and RAS, relative athletic score, and all that kind of stuff. But in 4 games, that guy was shut down, was knocked out of the game twice, injured at least 3 times, and ultimately shut down for his entire season after 4 games. If that's who he's going to be, then everything you were trying to do with him last year is almost off the table immediately. Like, you can't expose your quarterback to that kind of volume or that kind of serious level of contact and hits, or he's never going to be there. And then that was always the concern, you know, dating back years ago of these sort of athletic quarterbacks and guys that like to run. NFL was terrified of those guys for years because of this, because if those guys get hit and he gets knocked down, now you're into the backup and the season's done. Now, it turned out it wasn't done for Indianapolis, but like, that's the fear was realized immediately for the Colts. So now they're looking at this quarterback and they have to decide this offseason, did they just get incredibly unlucky for 4 weeks, or do they need to fundamentally change how they were planning on approaching Anthony Richardson within this offense? Because that potentially changes, number one, his sort of growth curve and how fast you need him to be good as a pocket passer. And number two, what his ceiling might be, period. Because if he can't do any of that stuff, or you have to really scale it back, he might be a different player. It's like taking Josh Allen and saying, all right, now you can't run anymore. Like, it's off the table. It takes away a part of what makes Josh Allen special.
Yeah. And Sam, like, I think in the same conversation about quarterback play and sort of like maybe what we didn't get to see in Anthony Richardson, I want to compare it to what we did get to see with C.J. Stroud, quarterback in the same division, taking number 2 overall last year, and a player that, I mean, all statistics, if you want to look at them, just the raw stats, I mean, 23 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, completed 64% of his passes in his first year, with a banged up, you know, group of receivers towards the end of the year, is basically just Nico Collins after Tank Dell goes down. They obviously probably make the move of the offseason in trading for Stephon Diggs to add to that group. They re-sign Dalton Schultz. They go out and they go get Joe Mixon as well. And they've sort of created the roster that most teams try to create when you've got a rookie quarterback on that rookie deal, right? I'm wondering, you know, where your head goes, because I think, you know, we do, like, you know, our weekly power rankings in the AFC here every week on the afternoon show, and it feels like almost a universal truth at this point that it's gone past opinion. It's just that Houston has surpassed a lot of these other teams in the AFC, and maybe they're right there with Kansas City and maybe even Baltimore. Is that where you sit after the offseason they had? And that doesn't even count Danielle Hunter on the other side of the football as well. Where do you sit with this team, with the Houston Texans and C.J. Stroud going into year two?
Yeah, it's jarring when a team sort of changes what everybody thought of them so quickly. Like, Houston was supposed to be bad last year. People were expecting them to have the number 1 and the number 2 overall pick before the season based off their own draft pick and Arizona's. Now, they ended up with one pick that was pretty good, but the other one was way down the draft because they made the playoffs. Like, this was supposed to be a terrible football team, and because of C.J. Stroud, because of Nico Collins breaking out, because of Tank Dell being so good right off the bat, and, you know, Bobby Slowick bringing in that San Francisco offense, and, you know, everything that went well, they were so much better than people were expecting them to be, and they are buying into the hype this offseason. I mean, forget everybody else. You only make a move like Stephon Diggs or like Joe Mixon if you think you're winning now. And to kind of reinforce that, they reworked Diggs' deal and made it literally a one-year rental.
Yeah,
this is not
crazy.
You know, we're not debating that anymore. Oh, how long is he going to be there? That might only be a year rental. It is a year rental now. They sort of codified that with the reworked contract. So they are making moves like they expect to win and challenge and rival Kansas City this year. And there's definitely a world where it could be possible. I mean, Stroud was phenomenal as a rookie. That group of receivers looks as good as anything in the NFL. Joe Mixon provides, I think, some of the heft in the backfield that they didn't have last year, and Slowick definitely wanted at times last season. Dalton Schultz is a really good player. The offensive line, I think, does look like a relative weakness, but I'm starting to kind of accept that any offensive line in this Shanahan offense just doesn't matter as much as you think it should. All of them have weaknesses on paper, and it rarely matters. I mean, Miami's offensive line on paper is pretty bad, and it doesn't seem to make any difference. Houston's offensive line on paper, outside of Laramie Tunsil, is not particularly good, and it didn't make much of a difference last year. So I think their biggest weakness might not be the issue that it looks like it should be, at which point, yeah, they can, I mean, they can absolutely make noise as long as Stroud doesn't, you know, have a sophomore slump or take a step back, which it's always possible. You know, we like to think of these quarterbacks and development generally as this nice, neat, linear curve, but it doesn't always go that way.
Yeah. I liked Sam Monson, by the way, on the West Her hotline from Pro Football Focus. I liked hearing you, too, a few minutes ago on Richardson running and, like, the Colts' plans for that and how the injuries, you know, will affect that as well. The Bills, at the beginning of last year, they certainly talked this way, and for the most part, they acted this way, that they wanted to dial back Allen running. Design runs, I mean, I remember the Tampa game midway through the year. We got like three of them on the first drive, and everyone's like, wow, we haven't seen that in a while. They kind of had to, right? Like, it felt like they were kind of boxed in. The offense was so constipated that, okay, we want to keep him healthy. We don't want to put all these carries on him, but the way their offense felt like it was going, maybe they thought they needed to. Do you feel like they need to again? That, like, we're not hearing the same type of talk from the Bills this offseason about dialing back his rushing. 15 touchdowns last year, and only, I think, five of them were QB sneaks. We got 10 from outside the one. Do you feel like there is, of course, an inevitability that eventually that rushing for him will get dialed back, but with the way the offense is currently constructed, that now would not be the time to do that?
Yeah, it's funny. The Bills are kind of dealing with the same question with the Anthony Richardson thing we talked about before, except with only on a theoretical basis. Like, it hasn't had the sort of dire consequences that it had for the Colts last season, where four games in, they saw exactly how bad that can go if you get unlucky and their quarterback gets injured multiple times and he's gone. The Bills, I mean, Josh Allen, you know, knock on wood, the guy seems indestructible. He just doesn't get hurt. He doesn't suffer too much from these additional contact that he takes that other quarterbacks don't. But they seem to sort of be looking at this big picture and long term and in a sort of overall holistic way and understanding smartly that, look, at some point it's going to affect his durability. And maybe it's not going to be in season any one year. Maybe it's just going to be how long he can play at this level. And if he wants to have, you know, a 15-year career, at some point we're going to need to play with the balance of this. And it's a really difficult question, I think, when you have a quarterback that is stylistically like Josh Allen, where the stuff that makes him special is inevitably, it's more risky, right? It's going to give him more hits, more contact than, let's say, a quarterback like Tom Brady, right, who just stood in the pocket and his special skill was to not take any contact, or Peyton Manning, right? you just didn't hit Peyton Manning. That was part of why he lasted as long as he did and why he was good, because he just got rid of the ball as soon as a large guy started barreling towards him. And that's its own trait. But that type of skill, the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady skill, obviously lends itself to just lasting longer because you're not going to get hit as much. The Josh Allen thing, I think, makes you potentially even more difficult to stop as an individual kind of offensive weapon. Like, now, no matter what you do, you can be wrong because Josh Allen is just that freaky, right? You can have the perfect defense called, and he can run over a defensive back, run around a defensive lineman, run right over the top of a linebacker. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. But every time he does that, it's a risk. And if he does that, you know, 15, 20 times in a season, that's 15 or 20 hits against NFL caliber athletes that a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady is not taking in a season. And there's no way of sort of calculating what that does to your long-term durability as a quarterback. And I think that's the risk that the Buffalo Bills sort of have to play with, and the balance is finding out how much is too much and how much do we want to sort of keep that in reserve just for when we've got to have it over the course of the season.
Yeah. Bills fans are thanking you for the knock on wood also, because it's 5 years in a row, it's since his rookie year, since he's missed a game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And I'm going back to PFF's, I think maybe it was a couple weeks ago or a month or so ago, when they came out with their best offensive lines this year, and the Bills ranked fifth. And I looked at it and said, I think the Bills' offensive line is pretty good. I don't know that I know that they're a top five unit in the league. Sam, how much does a guy like Josh Allen doesn't really, first of all, he doesn't take sacks. And I think the conversation we're talking about with him being a riskier player is right. I think he initiates most of the contact that he gets, though. Like, he's not a guy that takes unprompted hits in the pocket, blindside hits, where he doesn't necessarily control the contact. And I think that's what probably makes him unique. He doesn't take sacks. His offensive line's good. I don't know how great they are. And he probably makes them look very good, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things there. I kind of agree that I think Buffalo's offensive line is pretty solid. I wouldn't say that, like, if you showed me their line and said, where does this rank in the NFL, without thinking about it, you wouldn't say top five. But when you start going through all the offensive lines in the NFL right now, there aren't any top five offensive lines. Like, the ones that we typically, I mean, Philadelphia, right? Philadelphia have had the best offensive line in the NFL for the last couple of years. But now they have a Hall of Fame center retires. You know, they've got to put make another change inside a guard. So two out of their five spots are question marks now for the first time in a few years. So a lot of these offensive lines that we sort of generally think of as being the top five offensive lines have taken steps backwards. And actually, it's one of the position groups where very quickly you get into, okay, this is a pretty good group, but it doesn't feel like it's amazing. Like, I think the general sort of talent level or levels of offensive lines in the NFL have just kind of dispersed a bit, which I think explains Buffalo's high ranking. I think you're right that Allen helps himself a lot by not taking a bunch of unnecessary hits in terms of as a passer. It's a very important point. That ability to avoid sacks, to avoid major contact in the passing game is huge. I think quarterbacks drive how much contact they take way more than people think. You know, before, like, Miami back in the 90s or the 80s even used to get credited for having, like, the best offensive line in football because Dan Marino just never took sacks. And Miami's offensive line was pretty good back then, but Dan Marino was maybe the best player ever at avoiding that contact that we're talking about. Like, it's a symbiotic thing. Dan Marino may have been the biggest driver of that ridiculous sack record that Miami had during those years, and Josh Allen is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL at that right now. I don't know how much being the hammer rather than the nail matters when it comes to all those hits. I mean, ultimately, if you throw yourself into a brick wall, it doesn't really matter if you're throwing yourself into it rather than being hit by the brick wall. You're still not coming out of it particularly well. So I don't know how much that matters a huge amount, but I do think you're right that the fact that he's really good at protecting himself from hits otherwise maybe offsets a lot of the ones he takes by, you know, running the ball.
Yeah. But also, I'm not Mr. Offensive Line tape study or anything. Detroit's the line, though, right? That's the one in the league that's, like, top-notch?
Yeah, right now, I think okay. Detroit are now the best line in football now that Philadelphia's got some question marks.
Gotcha. Another minute or two with Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. Sam, I'm seeing so much written about, tweeted about, talked about, especially here, just because no more Stephon Diggs, the sentiment of, oh no, it's a good thing when you don't have an elite number one receiver where you feel like you have to throw him the football. I feel like Green Bay's talking this way a lot, and they are almost shooting to this point of being like a blueprint for some people, and I like their receivers, but you tell me, like, what about that as an idea where is it better to not have one guy that all the focus is going to be around where, you know, sometimes you might manufacture him touches, but also you know he's one of the better players versus like a Green Bay model, at least for right now, which is more on the surface, a bunch of guys that are pretty good, but not like one kingpin at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a hard and fast answer to that. I think there have been instances in the past where having a true superstar has become problematic. And the most obvious example I can think of is Detroit back when Calvin Johnson and Matthew Stafford were at their peak. Like, there were, I don't think having Calvin Johnson sometimes made Matthew Stafford a better quarterback. Like, he defaulted into a position of, when in doubt, just heave it in the general direction of Calvin Johnson. And yeah, he'll make a bunch of those plays because he's Megatron, but you're not taking the smart option a lot of the times, right? And when you remove Calvin Johnson from that, you sort of force the quarterback to play the coverage more honestly and actually try and target the most open guy, even if that most open guy is not Megatron. So I think generally it can become a problem. It's going to depend what is the rest of the receiving core. Like, outside of your number one superstar, what does it look like? But and generally, I don't think you need a number one guy is where I would come down on it. Like, if you have, it's never a bad thing to have a, you know, Tyreek Hill or a Justin Jefferson or a Devontae Adams or whatever. It's always good. They make receiving cores better. They make offenses better. You saw the impact that putting a guy like Ja'Marr Chase had on the Bengals as soon as he arrived. It can be completely transformative. Same thing with Tyreek Hill in Miami. But not having one of those guys doesn't mean you can't have an elite receiving core. I think you can kind of create it in the aggregate, like that old Moneyball meme. as long as you have all the skill sets ticked off, it doesn't necessarily matter if they're all there in one guy. If you've got a guy that can take the top off a defense, if you've got a guy that can work the middle of the field, move the chains underneath, if you've got a big physical body, like, as long as it's all there, in the group, it doesn't necessarily have to all be there in one guy. I think you can piece together an offense that's really, really good with a bunch of different receivers, and having that skill set sort of spread out amongst the core, I think can actually be kind of useful in not being able to just lock down on one guy and, you know, roll all the coverage in that direction and those kinds of things.
Yeah, and we'll let you go on this. And I know we've had you on a couple times since the end of the season, so I'm sure we've asked you a version of this, but how confident are you the Bills have that aggregate right now?
I think the aggregate is there. Actually, this is the one sort of area of that weird-looking receiving core that Buffalo has right now that I am pretty confident in. I think, like, the pieces are all there for them to have everything you want picked off. It's just I'm not sure it is all in that one guy. And I worry a little bit that they're going to kind of shoehorn players into positions that they don't necessarily belong. Like, Keon Coleman is the obvious one for me. I liked Keon Coleman in the draft, irrationally so. Like, a lot of data points scare you from Keon Coleman. If you start looking at his draft profile and, you know, lack of separation, there's a lot of red flags to his game relative to some other receivers. And the scariest thing of all was when Buffalo drafted him and sort of immediately said, yeah, he's going to slot in, it's just our X receiver. That's not what his profile says he should be. And, you know, maybe that's just what they say, and they'll sort of figure out a different way of using him, and it'll be more creative than that. But Coleman would worry me a little bit, the position, the sort of role that they seem to have planned for him. But, you know, a guy like Marquez Valdes-Scantling can win vertically, can win on the outside against press coverage. They've got a ton of versatile slot options. There's speed, there's size, there's run after catch ability. Like, everything you want in a receiving core is there in this Buffalo group. It's just a case of seeing what it's going to look like from a deployment point of view.
Sam Monson on the Wester Hotline, ProFootballFocus.com, PFF.com. Latest, I think you had, Sam, right, 10 players under pressure in year two. Was the latest on the website? All right, good. Good to hear. By the way, just got back from Ireland a couple weeks ago, and I loved it. I think Cliffs of Kerry is the coolest place I've ever been in my entire life. I don't know if you've been to all of Ireland. I know you're from Ireland, but loved it.
There's some beautiful stuff. Like anything on the West Coast is ridiculous to look at.
It felt like another world. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate the time, and maybe we'll chat once the season gets rolling.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
Sam Monson on the Wester Hotline. We will get some fantasy. When we come back, Adam Krautwurst, and he'll be with both of us on Sunday for the Scott Fish Bowl.
Can't wait.
Let's go.
Cannot.
Nate has the number two pick in two drafts at the same time. That did not work out for you, because that's going to happen the whole draft, isn't
it? All the whole time. Same draft order.
Oh, wait a minute. I should remember this. Is Fish Bowl third round reversal?
Oh.
For your sake, you would want it to be third round reversal, where the order flips in the third round, which means actually you wouldn't want that though, because then you'd have the second to last pick in the third round instead of the second pick. But then you'd have time.
I would have time.
You would have time in between.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I'm anxious about it.
Is this your first big fantasy draft of the season?
Yes.
I've only had rookie drafts.
Same. I've only had rookie drafts as well.
So yeah. This will be my first like whole draft, unless you count like the underdog drafts, but that's like best ball stuff. Adam Krautwurst, when we come back, we'll talk some fantasy here on WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number
1.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.